This is the Max Kellerman Show. Max Kellerman Show on ESPN Radio.
Welcome back to the Max Kellerman Show on ESPN Radio and the ESPN app. Also, check me out on Sirius XM Channel 80 and ESPN Plus. That is, yep, ESPN Plus is the best bang for your entertainment buck if you're a sports fan in the world. I'm not kidding. If I didn't work for the company, I would think that. Can the Packers fix it with Aaron Rodgers? Or I'll ask former GM Mike Tannenbaum in a second. 888-SAY-ESPN, 888-729-3776. And that would be ESPN, Raj, in case people are wondering. Not ESPM. I'm not aware of an ESPM, but an ESPN I know very well. The Max Kellerman Show is presented by Progressive Insurance. Guests join me on the Goodyear Hotline. Listen to Aaron Rodgers talk about what this Packers beef is about.
Never been about the draft pick, picking Jordan. I love Jordan. He's a great kid. He a lot of fun to work together. I love the coaching staff. Love my teammates. You know, I love the fan base in Green Bay. It's incredible 16 years. It's just kind of about a philosophy. And maybe forgetting that it is about the people that make the thing go. It's about character. It's about culture. It's about doing things the right way. A lot of this was put in motion last year. The wrench was just kind of thrown into it when I won MVP and played the way I played last year. So this is just kind of, I think, the spill out of all that. But, man, it is about the people, and that's the most important thing.
I understand what Aaron Rodgers is saying. On the other hand, if I were a GM for most of the history of the NFL, I'd treat the players like commodities because that's how they're, you know, they're interchangeable. And at a certain age, even the great ones, you want to move on a year too early instead of a year too late. You can still get something for them. You want to make plans, a succession plan. You know, Joe Montana, see you later, Joe. We got Steve Young. See you later, Peyton. We got Andrew Luck. See you later, Tom Brady. We have Jimmy G, right? And those were the plans. See you later, Brett Favre. We got Aaron Rodgers. And they were planning, and Rodgers flipped the script. Mike Tannenbaum, ESPN front office insider. Mike, you were a GM. So I imagine you have a lot of sympathy for GMs. And yet, and I think Gutekunst is a good one. But he's easier to replace than Aaron Rodgers. I mean, how many quarterbacks have ever played like Aaron Rodgers? Think of the season he just had. If you had to choose between Gutekunst and Rodgers, what would you do?
Well, hopefully, Max, it doesn't come to that. I would put effort and energy to say to Aaron Rodgers, like, hey, this is the best place for you. Like, we've got the back-to-back championship games. That's really hard. You're the MVP of the NFL. This is a really good team. We made a mistake. We could have handled communication a lot better, but we're not perfect. We're human. We apologize, and now let's try to move forward together.
See, this is what I would do, Mike. I think it requires – this is. I think in one hand, if I were the GM, if I was Gutekunst, I'd show up at Aaron Rodgers' house. I'd ring the bell. I'd have my hat in one hand and a contract making him the largest guaranteed in the history of football in the other. And when he answered the door, I would eat my hat and hand him the contract. Like, I think it requires real, like the Happy Gilmore to Chubbs thing. I'm stupid. You're smart. I was wrong. You were right. You're the best. I'm the worst. You're very good looking. I'm not very attractive. And you do it at a press conference where everyone can see. Like, if Gutekunst can show real humility, maybe. But, Mike, is he capable of doing that, do you think? Would he find that humiliating?
Yeah, it's just part of the job. Like, leaders are about owning mistakes and distributing credit. You know, generals in the army eat last, not first. Mm. And that's what good leaders do. And I'm sure at the right time and place, he will apologize. And again, he didn't do anything fundamentally wrong, Max. Let's be clear about that. He has an obligation to the franchise, and to have a young quarterback in the pipeline is the responsible move to make, much the way Jimmy Garoppolo was drafted by the Patriots behind Tom Brady. Mm-hmm. But maybe telling him ahead of time so he doesn't find out about social media would have been, you know, a more productive way to handle it. He's human like the rest of us are, and it's a mistake to me that's certainly fixable.
Now, Stephen A. Smith brings up on First Take all the time, and I'm talking to Mike Tannenbaum, ESPN front office insider.
Now, hold on there just a second, Max Kellerman.
Right. Stephen A. Smith brings up on First Take all the time that he has it on very good authority, and we can read between the lines, that Aaron Rodgers, several years ago, walks into the Packers front office and says, hey, I'd like to give you my input. And they told him basically, shut up and dribble. No political connotation there, but I mean, you know, like, know your lane. We don't care what you have to say. Shut up and play. And because it was handled that way, instead of, even if you don't take his advice, yes, we're interested in your input, right? That really turned Rodgers off. Is there any fixing that?
Yeah, no, that's interesting. I mean, those conversations, again, are very, very challenging to have because you want players to feel that, you know, they're playing in a special place. You want them to feel fulfilled and respected. And their job is to play. Your job in the front office is to run the team. So, look, twice in my career, Chad Pennington with the Jets, Ryan Tannehill with the Dolphins, Max, they were involved in the coaching search in a very quiet and discreet way. They met with a candidate. And candidly, one of the reasons I did that was I thought both of those players were going to help make the job more attractive. But there's a way to do it where, well, they're going to have a say. They're not making the decision. And it's a very sort of nuanced way that you have to manage these relationships. But again, if they had made that mistake, Max, to me, you can fix that and clean that up.
You know, it's what's amazing to me, Mike, is that, in fact, players want that cover. Like, you know, LeBron James obviously calls a lot of shots. But he and his people get sensitive if you say he got a coach fired, for example. You know, players want to have input, but I don't think want at least the public responsibility of making decisions about people's jobs. You would think this wouldn't be that hard to negotiate, you know, and to seek his input. I think maybe Gutekunst, who has done a good job as a GM, I think, in important ways, in the most important way, keeping the relationship good with your most important player has failed. What would you do if you were the Packers GM right now? How far would you be willing to go in terms of sending signals to Aaron Rodgers publicly?
I would not handle it publicly. I just don't think a lot of good comes out of it. I think you just have to, you know, keep things close to the vest publicly, and then you have to go see him multiple times. Even if he says no, you got to just keep working out and try to make progress. And show him that it's in his best interest to finish his career in Green Bay because it's going to be his best chance to be successful. And I wouldn't do that publicly because I think that just inflames the situation.
Switching teams here, what can the Falcons get for Julio Jones at this point, Mike?
You know, Max, I think it's probably a low two, maybe a three, because everybody knows that he's not going to be there. So now it's totally – they've lost any leverage they may have had. And to me, they have to cut their losses, get their best deal next week after June 1st and go from there. So that to me is really what they need to do because at this point, it's dragged on. He's clearly not going back there.
Yeah, he at one point, I believe, was the highest paid receiver, right? And he just kept his head down, stayed out of controversy, worked, was a good teammate, all those things. But we know as the salary cap rises, those contracts that looked – prohibitive for teams, right, or at least difficult for teams, start to look like deals, like Russell Wilson, for example. Is Julio Jones, given his age and what he's paid and the commitment to him and everything, is he on a team-friendly deal? Is it not so team-friendly? Is he worth the money? What do you think about, like, Julio Jones as an overall commodity, not just as a player, but given his contract, age, everything? Is that a guy you'd make a move for if you needed a receiver?
I do, and here's why. He's a great player. He's still at the very top end of the market. But, you know, when he's healthy physically, he's just so hard to defend. And even if he's only for the next 2 to 3 years at that level, he can make the difference, you know, the balance of power in the, like, for example, the AFC. You know, we're talking about teams like potentially like Baltimore being interested, maybe Tennessee and, you know, New England was speculated today on GetUp, for example. So to me, he may be the difference between a team winning and losing. And again, the margin for error is so small, Max, that I think this is a big, big deal because at this point, going into late May, early June next week, there's just not these sort of players available.
Thank you as always, Mike. Appreciate it. Look forward to talking to you soon.
Okay, great. Thanks for having me, Max.
Mike Tannenbaum joined me on the Goodyear Hotline, helping you discover the road ahead. Goodyear, more driven. One thing about Julio Jones is you'll find out about your quarterback. If you got an offensive line and everything you're wondering about a quarterback, put him on the Ravens. We'll find out about Lamar. Put him on the Colts. You'll find out about Carson Wentz. Put him on the Patriots. You'll find out about Cam Newton. Is this sustainable? Is this realistic? Can we win a Super Bowl like this? You got Julio Jones as a receiver on any of those teams. We're going to find out about the QB. The Max Kellerman Show on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus. Also check me out on the ESPN app and Sirius XM Channel 80, 888-SAY-ESPN, 888-729-3776. Lakers versus Suns. Can the Lakers afford to go down 0-2? Don't forget, they're on the road. You know, they win a game, they've stolen home court back. But I want to share with you something from The Ringer about the effect that AD has on the Lakers depending on the position he plays, depending on the role he fills. When he's power forward, when he's at the four, this is in the 2019-2020 regular season. So last year in the regular season, the bubble, with Davis at the four, the Lakers were a plus 5.2. When Davis was at the five, they were plus 5.8. It's a modest, it's a small, you know, 10% increase in effectiveness. And they use Davis 40% of the time at the five. So it's split roughly evenly, but he spends more time at the four than at the five. And he's a little more effective at the five than at the four. And that's because AD doesn't love playing the five because it's less wear and tear on him to play the four, he feels. In the postseason, and remember, that's the best the Lakers have been in the LeBron AD era, was last year's postseason. That's when they were at their best. They gentlemen swept a very tough Western Conference. They took a Nuggets team, for instance, that had just upset the Clippers after they'd beaten Utah in a great series. And they beat them 4-1. Just when the Nuggets, like just like against the Clippers, it's like, yeah, the Lakers are winning, but not by that much. And here it comes. The Nuggets have them just where they want them. Nope. Lakers just put them away. Gentlemen swept the Western Conference 4-1. And then went 4-2 against the Heat, against the Eastern Conference champs. No one could take them 7 games. Only one team took them 6. And what were they doing when they were that team? That was the postseason last year. With Davis at the four, they were a plus 8-3. With Davis at the five, they were a plus 15-8. They're almost 16 points better than the competition when Davis played the five. And he played the five 60% of the time. And then this year in the regular season, they're a plus 4-9 with him at the four, plus 16-9 with him at the five, but he's only played at the five 10% of the time. So what we see is the best the Lakers have been by far during the LeBron AD era so far is during the postseason last year when he played the majority of the time at the five and when they were 7+ points more effective than the competition with him at the five than they were with him at the four. It was a 7-point swing. They were a plus 8-3 with him at the four, but a plus 15-8 with him at the five, and they played him at the five 60% of the time. That's when they were. Majority of the time, you're the center, and look at how much better we are than when you're the center. So you got Andre Drummond right now, but really, shouldn't he be the backup five? I'll tell you something else. When the other team's starters are resting, either when they're gassed or when you're playing the second unit, you know what Andre Drummond is then? Drummond against starters is above average. You know what he is going to be against second units? I think the Lakers should be smart about this. I know they want to preserve AD's health, but then cut down the minutes. Spacing is better. Everything's better with him at the five, and the numbers back it up. Meantime, can the Clippers afford to go down 0-2 tonight versus Luka and the Mavs? You lose both games at home. Don't let Porzingis get hot. Finney Smith is good. Kleba's good. They're like just like the Suns have. Like you got Chris Paul and Devin Booker in the backcourt. Okay, that's perfect. And DeAndre Ayton's the five. Good, young, ascending, number one overall draft pick center. All right. What do you have at the forwards? You have real 3-and-D guys. Mikal Bridges and Cam Johnson. I know Cam doesn't always start, but those are two guys, for example. You could want to talk Jay Crowder. You can talk Saric. But I'm focusing on Mikal Bridges and Cam Johnson because they can defend and shoot from the outside and don't need the ball to be effective. They're kind of just the right guys for those roles. Same thing, really, on the Mavs. Hardaway can really play. You saw that in Game 1. And Doncic is an MVP-caliber player. And Porzingis, when healthy, is a killer. He's a 35-point dude in the playoffs when he's healthy and he's got it going. Kleba and Finney Smith give you size, length, defense, and outside shooting. The Mavericks were my dark horse coming into this season. Now, COVID ravaged them. And Porzingis' injury, you know, as usual, Porzingis got hurt. But he's not hurt now. And if he gets it going, the Clippers can be in some trouble. I don't know that they can afford to go down 0-2 at home. Donnie in Atlanta wants to correct me on the Outkast song title. I didn't mention the song title. What are you talking about?
No, it was told to you, but I just didn't want you to be loud and wrong, Max. That's all. I just wanted you to know that it's Hollywood Court and not Hollywood, whatever the name was they said. It's a neighborhood. That's all I was saying.
Ah, I gotcha. Gotcha. No, yeah, it was Raj who got that wrong. Why don't you berate Raj?
Yeah,
get,
Raj,
get on the air. Donnie in Atlanta needs to berate you over something.
Yeah,
I've only been, I've only been to Buckhead. I've never been to Hollywood Corporate Software, wherever you're talking about. Sorry.
I just didn't want your card to get taken. That's all, Raj. I just didn't want your card to get taken.
What zone are you messing with, Raj? What zone?
Hey, Max, what you think my Saints going to do this year?
I mean, look, I like Taysom Hill more than almost anyone I know. Like, I'm higher on him than other people. I'm not very high on Jameis Winston. But, you know, you just had an all-time great quarterback near the end, sure. But you couldn't do a whole lot with the Bucs in the division. I mean, you beat him in the regular season twice, but not when the chips were on the line. And I don't see that changing. I think the Saints are going to need to find their next quarterback to take them into the future. And it shouldn't be like a running back slash fullback slash wide out who can also throw the ball. It should be a guy where you feel confident. Hand this guy the ball and he's going to be the quarterback for the next 10 years. Harry in Dallas, you're on the Max Kellerman Show, ESPN Radio.
Max.
Yeah.
I'm pissed and I need for you to hear me out.
All right.
Why won't anybody talk about Luka? I have a theory, and I have a conspiracy theory.
All right.
Okay. First of all, I got to preface it. I did a little prison time. And you know what? Hmm. I can play basketball, and I can fight.
All right.
You know what else? Hmm. The black guys hated me, Max. They hated me.
Who did?
Okay. So, I'm sorry?
Who hated you?
The black guys in prison.
Oh, I see.
Because I could play basketball, and I could fight.
All right.
Okay. Well, here's my idea, Max, and this might be a little off topic. Mark Cuban, for the last 20 years, has been trying to get a big-time free agent superstar to the Dallas Mavericks, and he cannot do it. He cannot do it because no big-time superstar black free agent wants to ever defer to a white boy. It won't happen. It'll never happen.
Well, I mean, I hear what you're saying. Listen. I see that you're trying to make a point in there somewhere, and you're not afraid to like touch on race and everything. I really think that the issue in Dallas, because it seems to be a kind of player-friendly owner who's willing to spend money in a no-income state income tax state, warm weather state, you know, and why hasn't Dallas been a more desirable market? But I don't think it has to do with race. I think it has to do with the fact that the Dallas Cowboys completely monopolize the imaginations of that neck of the woods. And so you're always kind of, you know, second-class sports citizens as the NBA team. That's what I think anyone want to play with Luka. you better be ready for that ball. Great passer, great orchestrator of the offense, great player, period. I don't think anyone would have a problem playing with Luka. Max Kellerman Show, presented by Progressive Insurance. Mike Tyson's The Knockout premieres on ABC tonight. I'll talk to the executive producer of Mike Tyson's The Knockout coming up next. I'm really looking forward to that. You know what got me? They talked about how Mike Tyson, Michael Jackson, and Michael Jordan basically ruled the world back then. Who was the baddest Mike, right? If you're a business owner who's hiring, it can feel like trying to find a needle in a haystack. But when you post a job on ZipRecruiter, their matching technology finds these qualified candidates for you and invites them to apply. In fact, 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. So while other companies give you too many options, ZipRecruiter finds you the needle in the haystack. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free at this web address, ZipRecruiter.com/max. That's ZipRecruiter.com/MAX.
The playoffs are back.
I think this narrative needs to stop about does Russell Westbrook want to win. You want to question his shooting ability? Fine. Don't question the desire.
Opinions, analysis, and the latest news. Tomorrow morning on Keyshawn, J. Will, and Zubin at 6 Eastern on ESPN Radio and on ESPN2.
The Max Kellerman Show, the podcast.
The Max Kellerman Show on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus. Also, check me out on the ESPN app and Sirius XM Channel 80. 888-SAY-ESPN, 888-729-3776. Roxanna Sherwood, senior executive producer of ABC's Mike Tyson, The Knockout. It's on tonight. Can't wait to see it. Joins me now. Roxanna, are you there?
I am here, Max.
Well, thank you.
How are you?
Good, good. Thank you for joining me. So something caught my ear on the preview where someone said the world was basically ruled back then by three black men, but I really heard three Mikes, you know, and I used to think this. There's Michael Jordan, Michael Jackson, and Mike Tyson. What would you say, having done this project, was the peak of Mike Tyson's celebrity? Can you give someone comparable in today's popular imagination to the kind of celebrity Tyson achieved at that point?
It's hard to translate it today. You're living in the glitz of the 1980s. You know, it's celebrities were everything, as you know. And, you know, back then it was the Sphinx fight, I think, was the height of his glory, 1988. You know, three mics, as you said. Three mics, those were the choices on the table. And yeah, it was which mic did you want to be, as Dave Woolley said in the show. But, you know, this is when every celebrity showed up ringside, and it was, you know, Atlantic City, Trump casinos, you know, the big glitzy, you know, dashing splash of celebrity that it was then. And he owned the show. That was when, you know, we all ran out to get in front of a pay-per-view somewhere and do a big party and to sit there and watch a fight that won 91 seconds.
Yeah, in fact, people don't even know this nowadays, but the reason he fought Buster Douglas in Japan was because people in the States were fed up with paying money to see a 90-second knockout. Buster Douglas was supposed to be another 90-second knockout. He wound up upsetting Mike Tyson. But when I think of the three Mikes, right, in this case we're talking about Mike Tyson, and the project is ABC's Mike Tyson, The Knockout. It's on tonight, talking to Roxanna Sherwood, the senior executive producer. You know, Michael Jackson probably made the biggest impact because music affects people that way all around the world. But it's not like people wanted to be like Michael Jackson, many people. Some people did. Michael Jordan, everyone wanted to be like Mike. He was the guy you wanted to be like. But Mike Tyson was the baddest man on the planet. And there's a different kind of category for a guy like that, particularly coming off of the Larry Holmes era, where Holmes was not as popular as Ali, and Ali wasn't a big knockout artist, and there was George Foreman who didn't reign very long, and you really have to go all the way back to Joe Louis to have a guy who captured the imagination the way Tyson did, like, oh my God, this dude is just knocking everyone out. What was your biggest takeaway after this project about Mike Tyson?
Well, I would say, you know, you're pointing to, you know, the baddest man on the planet, the guy we knew as Iron Mike, you know, fear personified. And then he was playing into that, you know, the public's imagination. You know, your colleague Shaft talks a lot about that in the show. You know, this idea, this mythology around this man. And that appealed to us. I think, you know, we saw a guy from the streets of Brownsville, you know, bringing and harnessing his rage in the ring and disciplining it into the ring. And then the biggest takeaway and the thing that attracted me to the story wasn't, you know, because I'm no boxing expert, to be totally frank. That's your world. I came at this because I'm interested in how he sort of navigated across his life. It's the way that he drove his whole life that seems so fascinating. He seems to, you know, hover above, and we've watched the sensationalized, the ups and the downs across his entire lifetime. And somehow, you know, he manages to still today capture the public's fascination. He's still welcome and celebrated on talk show couches. And, you know, the takeaway is there's lessons to be learned about his own sort of self-examination, which he did right before our cameras for years and years.
Yeah.
You know, as he provided us entertainment for years and years, and he kind of lived it right in front of us in the open. And then the opportunity to take this, you know, this wealth of archive of material and distill it down into, you know, these 4 hours was a real opportunity to put context out there and really explore, you know, what it is that he's been, you know, so about trying to be a better person, making all kinds of mistakes publicly, and then persevering and letting us know how he does it, you know. And so the takeaway is sort of, as we in society today in our world of cancel, et cetera, and trying to, you know, slap labels black and white on the spectrum of things, this guy is able to, you know, come at this in the middle. It's sort of like, you know, bad people do good things. Good people do bad things. And, you know, the truth is in the middle. And so his humanity appealed to me across the breadth of his life.
He
and
was
I think
a guy,
lessons in that for
talk
all
to
of
Roxana
us.
Sherwood, who's the senior executive producer of tonight's ABC's Mike Tyson, The Knockout. He was a guy who, Roxana, it seemed to me, was not going to live a very long life. I remember I used to think that about Mike. It made me sad. Like, he's just self-destructive, and it said. And yet, not only did he manage to survive, but he found this second career as, like, a philosopher interviewer. Like, Hotboxing with Mike Tyson is one of the best podcasts there is, you know? And he is Pablo Torre had a piece on this on ESPN Plus where, you know, Mike Tyson is interviewing these, you know, a lot of people who fancy themselves tough guys. But before Mike Tyson, the you know, warrior god, right, they are humble. And he's asking them questions straight up that probably no one else could get away with asking. How, in doing your research for this, are you surprised that Mike has had this second act, the kind of success he's had in American life in his second act?
No, I'm not surprised, actually, when you dig into it, because he's been talking introspectively, transparently, vulnerably like this for years. And, you know, the example you're giving of the podcast, it's like he's been like true to self the whole time, you know, whether or not, you know, he leads us astray in terms of what he says, when he says, the heart is there. That he has been, you know, trying before our eyes to live a better life, to be a better person. So actually, when you put the pieces together across a lifetime, he never departed from that in any era, up and down, like the ups and downs that he lived in. He never seemed to really, you know, be somebody other than who we've seen him be. It just took putting it together. That's why I actually don't think it's terribly surprising today. I do think a lot of things along the way where society would have been perhaps less forgiving today, given the world we're in, the climate we're in. I think, you know, there was a lot in his favor in the timing and where we were at as a society and a culture.
Roxana,
and,
what time? We're running short on time. What time is this on tonight on ABC?
This is on 8 o'clock tonight, and then 8 o'clock next Tuesday night for the next part, and it'll be on Hulu right behind the airing.
So there you go, everybody. Don't miss it. Mike Tyson, The Knockout. I can't wait to see it. Roxana Sherwood, executive producer. Appreciate you coming on.
Thank you, Max. Appreciate the time.
That was Roxana Sherwood on the Goodyear Hotline. All right, ready for this? I promised you earlier in the show. When, you know, the radio host promises you the secrets to the universe in the upcoming block, and eventually you're like, yeah, you're not giving me the secrets to anything. You're not changing my world. And you stop believing them. But I'm telling you right now, the next segment, I'm going to say something that I can't believe I'm saying on the radio, and I can't believe more people aren't talking about it, and it will change your world. The Max Kellerman Show on ESPN Radio is presented by Progressive Insurance. Progressive's Home Quote Explorer is changing the way you buy home insurance. Now you can go online, get a custom quote, and save both time and money. Learn more at progressive.com.
The Max Kellerman Show, the podcast.
The Max Kellerman Show on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus. Also, check me out on the ESPN app or SiriusXM Channel 80. Okay, so, got to pay off that tease. Listen, Baker Mayfield was talking about how he believes in aliens the other, you know, the other day, and I was asked about that on a No Doubt by Raj. And I said, look, the universe is teeming with life. It has to be. If you know, when, once you understand the size of the galaxy alone and how many galaxies there are, and the fact in our solar system alone, not only do you have life on Earth, there's a chance that there was once life on Mars.
Well, what is happening right now? And, what are you doing?
And one of the, yes.
What, the why are you doing the read? Let's get into Last Take, and then we'll do all this. What's
happening? Hold on a second. Hold on a second.
Hold on.
We talked about this in our special meeting.
Hold on a second, guys. Oh, do you have something produced that you want to play? Yeah.
Well, we're going to
talk about it just 2 hours ago.
888-SAY-ESPN, 888-729-3776. Did you miss any of the Max Kellerman show today? You can always find both hours of the show posted as a daily podcast, available wherever you listen to podcasts.
You heard First Take?
At least it's good to hear your voice finally, because I know on First Take, I only hear you on the intro and outro.
Now hear Max's Last Take.
Yeah, you guys could have let that one go. Listen, so Baker Mayfield, you know, hey, he believes in UFOs and stuff. And I said how, given the fact that there's life on Earth, and there may have been life on Mars at one point, and there may still be life on moons of either Jupiter or Saturn or both in our very solar system, and given how many billions of solar systems there are and millions of galaxies there are, the odds that we're alone in the universe are virtually zero. But what are the odds that we've been visited by extraterrestrials? Also, I thought, like highly intelligent ones, very low. And that was before I was aware of this story. It just wasn't on my radar. But there was a 60 Minutes piece done on it. And there are apparently objects whose movement the Pentagon can verify but cannot explain, that don't seem to have propulsion systems. Again, Bill Whitaker, 60 Minutes, they did a piece on this, and they have credible sources, pilots, multiple pilots, verifying this not only with their eyes, but with radar and infrared stuff, saying, yeah, that, and it, apparently the object is moving and changing angles in ways that would defy technology we have on Earth. They're wondering, is this, since it's in our airspace, and pilots have apparently seen it every day for years, for several years. Is it Chinese technology? Is it Russian technology? Is it some technology we have that we can't explain? Barack Obama was asked about it on a late show, and he said, well, we can't explain it. We don't know yet. I've never been briefed on little green men or any like special, but we can't explain it. The senior senator, Democrat from, where is he from? Well, Martin Heinrich, what state is Martin Heinrich from? New Mexico, has also verified we don't know. And maybe it's an elaborate hoax. That's possible. Maybe it is Russian or Chinese or our own technology. That's possible. Maybe it's some possibility I'm not considering. But given all the facts, and I cannot believe I'm going to say this on the air, I think there's a non-negligible chance, certainly a good enough chance, you know, it's not maybe not 50%, but it ain't 1% chance either. It's an extraterrestrial craft of some kind. Like, think about that. But what I'm surprised about is, given the fact that the Pentagon, it's apparently in June, is supposed to release something on this, like what they know, what they don't know, that this is somehow flying under the radar. Like, no one's talking about it. Like, I didn't know it. Baker Mayfield referenced it. I'm like, okay, Baker Mayfield's crazy. I looked into it, and it's credible. I would say, back of the envelope calculation, it's like a 20% shot that it's not earthly technology. It's not some kind of natural phenomenon we can't explain, or a hoax, an elaborate hoax, or some kind of like something that starts out, some kind of object that's moving in some mass hysteria within the branch of government that's observing it. I mean, it's possible. But you have to acknowledge the like. Wouldn't that be the biggest thing in human history? And somehow, no one's talking about it. No one's talking about it. No one's even aware of it. It's on 60 Minutes. Obama and a sitting senior senator are like, yeah, we can't explain it. And the Pentagon's supposed to release a report like in a week. And everyone's like, I don't know. Could be aliens. Look at that. Raj, I'm a skeptic, but I have to acknowledge there's a possibility.
I am shocked. You know, I've tried to include this stuff on our show in the past, and you're like, come on now. You know, and you didn't like it. But like you say, when you get facts, you can no longer look beyond them. You got to start considering this. And this is a proud moment on the Max Kellerman show.
Our government is admitting in a public and credible way, we can't describe an object in our airspace that moves beyond any technology we have. It can go 60,000 miles an hour, whatever. Like, what am I going to say? I'm interested. I want to know the answer. Yes. I demand answers.
Yes.
Max Kellerman Show, ESPN Radio, Shanae Angola Jr. coming up. And just like that, the topic's gone, and now we're going to go back to talking about sports. No one's talking about it. Why not? Max Kellerman Show.
The Max Kellerman Show, the podcast.